This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
I'm Tash, I'm an alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Tash. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who's just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9, and we're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Tash. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi again, Tash, and welcome to the show. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. Do you want to tell us how old you are?
Oh, I'm 44 years old.
Brilliant. And how long have you been sober?
8 years and 29 days.
Amazing. That's awesome. And what do you do? Do you work?
I'm a mother of three adult kids now.
Right.
And I work as a teacher aide at a primary school in Christchurch.
Wonderful. That's amazing. And so you mentioned you've got three kids, and are you from Christchurch?
I certainly am, born and raised.
Brilliant. And so tell us a little bit about what it was like for you and your, I guess, introduction to drinking and alcohol in your early life.
My introduction to alcoholism, I guess. My mother actually got sober when I was 18 months old.
Wow.
So prior to that, from what I've been told, it was pretty messy. I spent a lot of time with my grandmother because she was in her disease. And then she went into treatment in 1978 and got sober. And there she met the man that would end up being my dad, who was an AA as well. So I wasn't actually exposed to drinking or in, you know, active alcoholism when I was young.
And that was something that was maintained right throughout your childhood into early adulthood?
Yes, yeah. My mother used to drag me along to AA meetings. I used to drive people insane because I was, you know, loud and mischievous. But that was kind of, that was what she had to do. I mean, Dad was out working, so, and Mum needed to stay sober. She was a young woman. Yep. She was, 19 when she got sober. So
that's,
and that kind of went on until I eventually... Yeah, came in for myself.
So tell us about then, you know, your drinking. When did that start?
I'd been drunk at a young age. I have an older sibling. I have older siblings. So even though my parents were in AA, they weren't anti-alcohol. Mm-hmm. So we used to go to whoopee parties. And we used to go to, you know, parties like that. There was never a taboo. It was never, you know, it was what it was. So, you know, I used to follow my older brother around like, you know, like a little puppy dog, and whatever he was doing, I wanted to do too. Mm. So I think it was one of his birthdays. He had a beer and pizza party, and I helped myself to the beer. And I was quite young, but I remember being drunk, and I remember the feeling even then.
Yeah.
But my own drinking started, you know, when I was 13.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty much how I started. Found the right friends that were into the same thing.
Yep.
Found the love of my life who was into the same thing. And so my first kind of drunk as a young person, as a teenager, was a bottle of vodka 62.
Good
and
Lord.
With the boyfriend, and made a complete mirror of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Vomited everywhere, and couldn't wait to do it again.
Yeah. And so you'd surrounded yourself with the right people. So did that carry on for quite some time?
Yeah, well, I spent time with people that wanted to do the same thing. Mm. I mean, it was a lot easier to buy a bottle of Marc Evo or Bernardino or whatever my allowance would allow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and they were all doing the same thing. So it was pretty easy. And, yeah, it wasn't really an issue.
And how did that progress into your adulthood?
I think, you know, the love of my life ended up, he got mixed up with some pretty rough people. And I kind of started to, so I was doing it as often as I could and started getting a bit more curious about other substances as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, kind of been in some really dodgy situations, and I had my first blackout when I was 14.
Yep.
Woke up the next morning, and I'd made a complete ass of myself in front of, you know, my family, and I didn't know what a blackout was, even though my parents were in AA. It didn't apply to me. And woke up and I'd wet the bed, and many a times, countless times, I've wet the bed. I couldn't tell you. Same with blackouts. There's so many.
You didn't think, though, this isn't normal, or I should stop, or did you try to stop?
No, well, I mean, I had the talk from my mother. I mean, even though, you know, my mother especially could see that, you know, you know, she was fearful, obviously, that her daughter was going down the same path as her. She kind of gave me the talk, you know, it's not how much you drink, it's what happens when you drink. Mm. But, I mean, I was young, you know, I knew everything. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of carried on. And I guess my only way of controlling was I didn't want to not be out of it. Mm. So if I wasn't drinking, I'd be doing something else.
Sure.
So I always had something on board,
yep,
or someone on board, you know, anything.
And so as you, you know, progressed into adulthood, family, friends, relationships, was there any consequences as a result?
Well, there was eventually. I was pregnant at 17.
Okay.
And, you know, so I brought a baby into the world. Mm-hmm. You know, prior to that, actually, I'd actually went into Queen Mary Hospital for my first drug and alcohol treatment, which had come from the love of my life being in prison. You know, the stakes certainly went up when my boy was born.
Yep.
And it wasn't just about me anymore. I wasn't just taking me down. I was taking him down as well. So, you know, my parents got involved, and I was with the father of the child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of, it the relationship with my parents and even with the father of my child, who I, eventually married, thinking would be a good idea and that would actually fix what's wrong with me. So the relationships of my close family was pretty tattered at that point, and that was, when I was 19.
Right, right. And were there any other consequences, any trouble with the law? Lost jobs.
I'd lost jobs mainly through the relationship, with my son's father. There was physical abuse and things like that. And so, I ended up with broken arms when I was pregnant, and so I'd lose my job. And because I just continually, was a letdown, really. And I don't know how I never got caught drunk driving. There were times that I was told the next day that I'd been pulled up on blackout. I remember going down Billy Ave and actually going through a red light. I do remember that. And I don't know if it was lucky that I didn't get caught, but I just didn't get caught.
And so how bad did it get that you had to seek help in some way? And what was it?
Well, after, my son was born, and it had got really bad, and I'd married this man. I actually did a geographical. I took off up to Nelson, took my son with me in my alcoholism, and I was made to come back by the police and by my parents.
Wow.
So I actually came into AA, and I was active in AA for about 5 years, and then ended up having a couple more kids, and eventually AA drifted away because I was too busy, and I relapsed again. And came back, and it got way worse. The things I was doing got way worse. I was still married with 3 kids in tow. And I came back this time in October 2012.
So how long did you go back out for?
Would have been, 11 years?
Wow. Wow. And, and you mentioned it got progressively worse.
Oh, it did. But this time it was a different kind of worse. When I did the geographical with my son and the police looking for me, externally everything looked really bad. And it was bad. But on the inside, I didn't realise that I hadn't fully accepted that I was an alcoholic and an addict, for that matter.
Sure, sure.
And so when I came back in this time, it was an inside job. The kids, everything kind of looked okay on the outside. I was quite unstable. And the people that knew me well knew that something wasn't right. But on the inside, I just knew I didn't want to live anymore, but I didn't want to die because of my kids, and I was terrified.
And that was what brought you back into the rooms?
Yeah, a couple of days beforehand, I had no desire to come back to AA. I hated AA. I thought it was all AA's fault. Mm-hmm. That's how I felt. And then it just got so bad, the pain got so bad that I got honest and I told someone the truth, what was really going on. I opened up to my family and I opened up to my doctor, and expecting judgment from my doctor, and he was really supportive and loving. And there were people in AA prior to that when I had that 5 years of sobriety, that had kept in contact with me and said, "Hey, honey, how are you going?" But it was on the inside. I just knew I was going to die. I wanted to die, but I didn't want to die because I had my kids.
And so going back into the rooms, what was it like?
Horrible. It was horrible. My pride and my ego had taken a bash. There were people in there that were, still sober, and I was the one that went back out there. And I walked in, I met this woman that's been sober about 40 years now. She met me at that meeting, and I walked in, and they, as hard as it was, as soon as I sat down and I saw the steps on the wall and people started talking, I knew I was in the right place. I just kind of, I gave up. I surrendered, I guess.
And so tell us about, what are some of the things that you do, when things aren't great? What are some of the things you do to cope with difficulty?
Well, that's been an experience, because usually I'd do it on my own. And to be honest, I can still get like that. That's kind of what recovery is it's kind of a back and forwards. I have a handful of really good friends, and my sponsor, but I don't keep all my eggs in one basket. I have a whole lot of good women and some men, but mainly women in recovery that I can talk to, and that I go to meetings. I go to meetings, and I have a home group. You know, a home group is where, you know, somewhere where I can, it's the one group where I know the people, they know me, and that I can be completely honest and pray and meditate.
And has that always been easy?
No.
Does that come easy?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No, being that vulnerable with people, you know, I'm so sensitive. And, you know, my sensitivity, I think, is what, you know, what had a lot to do with my alcoholism, what's a big part of alcoholism, and then getting sober and having to deal with being an open wound and my nerves outside of my skin. It was really hard, but I got bad enough where I had to trust that the people that were in those rooms, when they said that it gets better and that they've got a life beyond their wildest dreams, that they're telling the truth. So it was a leap of faith and trust, and I had nowhere else to go.
And that was it, willing to go to any length.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
My ass had to be on fire.
and so we talk about service as being a really important part of recovery. Mm. Is that something you still do today?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I, you know, at the very beginning, of course, me being me, I wanted to do the big jobs, like be the, you know, the secretary and, you know, open the meeting and be the centre of it all. The very first sponsor I had was a hard lady, and it was just do the dishes, you know, do the box, you know, the tea and coffee, and, you know, just do that to begin with. And, you know, and then I found a home group, and then they eventually, because I was going for so long, they suggested that I go to Southern Area Assemblies, and I started doing that. And although I'm not a general service rep anymore, I still go because that kind of connection with other people that are doing service too.
Yep.
And I feel like I feel part of.
And the steps, how have the steps been important for you?
I think the steps have made, I feel the steps have made the difference between this recovery and the last recovery of 5 years was just showing up to meetings. And I mean, that's important.
Yep.
You know, it's the unity. That's what brings us together. And when I'm in a meeting, I can be all good and spiritual, but it's when I go back out into the world at 3 o'clock in the morning when my head's going, where the steps, you know, come into play, and the prayer and meditation and breathing. And that's part of being my experience with God or meditation, whatever that is. I'm not a religious person, is breathing, you know, being present, you know, accepting things as they are, and that they'll change. Nothing stays the same.
And we do talk about AA being spiritual, not religious. Mm. And so for you, how's that changed since you came in and over the years?
Well, I've become more open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's been the thing with me. I kind of came in, I saw God on the wall, and it was kind of those old ideas of, oh my God, what? Oh, I forgot about this. But it is, it talks about it being all broad, you know, it's open. It's open to interpretation. And at the beginning, I just did as I was told. If I was told to pray and get on my knees, I cried and kicked, but I just did it. I just did it, and I prayed whether I believed or not.
Yep.
I just kept, you know, that's part of what the action is. It's not running up the hill. It's the action of getting on my knees and humbling myself enough. And it's changed over the years, and things have happened. You know, things have happened, and I've seen other people in AA who have started off, you know, after me, and seen them change, and there's something in there. There's something in there.
Mm. And so tell us, what's life like today?
Busy. Busy. I mean, it was busy with three kids, but I mean, you know, it's gone in a direction I never thought that it would go in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my relationship with my daughter was so difficult. When I got sober, she couldn't stand me.
Right.
I completely let her down. And a couple of years ago, we went to Thailand, and she got engaged, and she wanted me to be there, you know, and that's through, you know, another person in the fellowship thought I would be a good person to come and work at the same place that she does. And so I started working in a primary school with kids. And kids, I know some of these kids have got more maturity than me. And I mean, it's been such a cathartic, spiritual, painful, beautiful experience. And, you know, I'm still married to the man of the first child that I dragged up to Nelson. Yeah. You know, I was still married. And that was a hard... That's been hard for him and for me and for the kids. But, you know, life's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
I can complain. I can always find something to complain about. But really, if I stand back and look, I'm okay. You know, everything is actually okay.
And sponsorship's important to you? That's something you still have today?
I do. To be quite honest, sometimes I can still go back into self-will. I wouldn't say that I'm ringing my sponsor every couple of days or every, or anything like that. But what I said previously is that I have other women, other women that are in long-term sobriety as well. She's not always available. Yes. And so, but absolutely, especially going through the steps. I certainly wouldn't do that on my own.
Yep. And being able to reach out, and that's something that's become easier and easier.
And I sponsor people as well. Wow, what an experience that has been. Wow.
And so what would you recommend for someone who thinks they might have a drinking problem? What could they ask themselves?
I was thinking about that earlier. I guess if they're thinking about it, we're in such a time where there's a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. You know, there are the questionnaires that you can do. Come to a meeting.
Give it a go.
Be brave and step into a meeting. And, and just investigate. And give, what have you got to lose? But, like I've said previously, it wasn't until there was nowhere else that I came back. Even though I knew it was safe, I was brought up with it. I had to concede to my innermost self that I was stuffed. And but there are people there. There are people there with their hand out. But, there's wealth of knowledge on the internet. Meetings in Christchurch, we've got 60 meetings. We've got online meetings. COVID has had some blessings, There's lots of wealth of meetings out there where you can stay anonymous and still investigate. So, just your step and take a leap of faith.
Well, Tash, thank you so much for your time and coming on the show and sharing your story with us. It's been lovely to have you here.
Well, thanks for asking.
Brilliant. Okay, for our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can also find podcasts of our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download, subscribe and listen to podcasts on iTunes and Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.